everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I hope you all in the Northeast and the North are doing well with all the nor'easters you've had. It's been a really rough time. I'm sorry to tell you that I'm absolutely loving Southwest Florida right now. It's 70 degrees and balmy and clear blue skies. But especially I'm happy today because one of my favorite sci-fi and fantasy writers is with me. She has won so many awards that I actually had to write them all down so that I could tell you about them. In 2005, she won a Best of the Bay Award for Writers with Drinks. On 2006, won the Best of the Bay Award for Writers with Drinks. In 2017, Edmund White Award for Debut Fiction Finalist for Choir Boy. 2016 again, Lambda Literary Awards for Choir Boy. 2011, the Nebula and the Hugo and the Theater Sturgeon Award for 6 months, 3 days. The Hugo for 6 months, 3 days. The Nebula for last year for All the Birds in the Sky, an absolutely spectacular book. Also, the IAFA William Crawford Fantasy Award for the same book and the Locust Award for Best Fantasy for All the Birds in the Sky. If you don't know who I'm talking about, you've missed out on some beautiful, beautiful writing. It's my honor to welcome to Authors on the Air, Charlie Jane Anders. Hi, Charlie Jane. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled that we're talking. I'm stepping outside of genre for the most part because I'm not super familiar with a lot of science fiction and fantasy writers, but I will tell you that I'm drawn very much by titles of books. And when I saw All the Birds in the Sky, I had to immediately go and get that book just because the name drew me in so much. So maybe we can start with that, Charlie Jane, and you can tell me, where did you get that title from? How did that come to
you?
Yeah.
Oh, that was really lucky. Like, basically, I have a really hard time with titles. Titles are really rough, and oftentimes it takes, a few tries to get the title that works. I've very rarely had titles just kind of fall in my lap. And in the case of All the Birds in the Sky, I think I went through a bunch of different titles. Like, for a long time, it was called Indestructible Friends. And then, because it's about this friendship between these two people that kind of turns
right.
kind of romantic towards the end, spoiler
yeah.
alert. And
right.
So for a long time, it was called Indestructible Friends. And then that just didn't, people felt like that was not an exciting enough title, and it just didn't kind of hold on. Like, it didn't have the staying power that I hoped it would.
Uh-huh.
And then I just went through a bunch of different titles. There was like a million of like possible titles that I was kind of juggling around. At one point, it was for like a few months, it was going to be called Our Shoes Will Be Insane, which is what the two main characters say to each other in that one scene where they're at the mall under the escalator. They,
yes.
One of them says, when we're grown up, our shoes will be insane. And I just thought that was like a fun kind of weird title that didn't tell you anything about the book, but might make you interested. But it just, I don't know. I think people would have thought it was going to be a book about shoes with that title. And like the cover would have been a picture of a bunch of shoes. And then, finally, like a lot of my best titles end up quotes from the work. And I finally,
right.
like, I came across this part where, Patricia is in the middle of a tight situation and then she sort of escapes and she's like, thank all the birds in the sky. And I just sort of thought, oh, that's got a ring to it. And
it really
then
does.
And then we almost had to change it because there was this other book that had gotten a lot of attention called All the Birds Singing, which came out, a year or two before mine that had gotten, I think, some award nominations and some attention. And my agent was like, oh, we have to change it. And the publisher didn't want to. And it was a giant tug of war, but I was actually really glad that we kept that title because I think it's got a nice ring to it. It sounds interesting. It kind of gives you weirdly a sense of what kind of book that is. And also it got us an amazing cover. Like, I think that having that title led to my favorite cover ever. So,
it is a fabulous
I was just really happy. Yeah, I was so lucky.
Congratulations on it, because it's beautiful, and the story is so lovely. For those of you who have not read any of Charlie Jane's work, there is a delightful little crossover of science fiction and fantasy, but it's also very quirky and playful, but also gives you a lot of things to think about when you're reading this book. Would you mind giving a little, I don't know, the elevator pitch maybe about All the Birds in the Sky?
Sure, of course. I mean, All the Birds in the Sky, it's about these two people, one of whom is a witch with like magical powers who can, you know, talk to animals and do other kind of magical stuff. And the other of whom is, you know, a mad scientist who, you know, can build amazing gadgets and, you know, build rockets and supercomputers and, you know, technology that doesn't actually exist right now. That's kind of like crazy, you know, unimaginable technology. And the two of them become friends when they're in junior high school. They're in there like in, I think, seventh or eighth grade. And then they just, you know, they have this kind of intense friendship when they're kids. And then when they're older, when they're in their 20s, they meet up again and kind of reconnect and have a very different kind of relationship as adults, where they're kind of, you know, a lot of the same issues come back. And a lot of it is about kind of friendship and growing up and the kind of friendships you have when you're 13 or 14, and then the kind of friendships you have when you're in your 20s, and how the same issues kind of come back in different ways as you get older. And so it's sort of a personal book, even though it's about magic and science and the kind of collision of these two things. I don't know if that kind of conveys it.
It does. I'm curious as to what drew you to this particular genre. I don't want to say it's a mashup, because it's not. It is definitely for lovers of science fiction and or fantasy, but it's so unique in the way you write. Were you always a lover of this type of book and writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the most exciting things that are happening right now in genre in general are things that cross lines and kind of bring surprisingly kind of incongruous elements together and kind of make you, you know, see them in a different way by juxtaposing them with something else. I feel like there's been a lot of great stuff in the last, like, you know, 5, 10, 15 years that kind of brought together different genre elements and maybe also straddled the literary genre divide. And so I sort of thought about that. I liked the idea of like a wizard and a mad scientist, or a witch and a mad scientist, being in the same book, because just of all the interesting kind of, you know, differences between them and the different kind of attitudes and worldviews and just, you know, how they approach everything. But also I sort of wanted it to be a quirky book a little bit. I sort of, you know, my original thought was to go for sort of the Douglas Adams approach.
Uh-huh.
I have like a signed picture of Douglas Adams over my computer at home. I'm a huge fan. And but then, you know, it became a little bit less overtly humorous and more like maybe more Vonnegut than Douglas Adams a little bit, and a little bit more kind of like gentle humor and like character based.
And it is very character based. I have to say it's very character based. You know, when I was doing some research on you, one of the things that is in your bio is that you are a performance artist. Would you tell me a little bit about that, please? Yeah.
Oh my
Would
gosh.
You think I could,
All right,
you
I think you've
think
been
I
reading my Wikipedia
that?
Page.
You didn't think I could find that, did you? I've been all over on you. There's so much literature on you that I'm taking
yeah.
it all in. You're really into pop and all of these, you know, for you call them new outcasts, which I love that language. It's such a great way to describe
it. Oh, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So
the performance art, like, that feels like I did more. I still do that in some fashion nowadays. Back, you know, maybe 10 years ago, I was doing a lot of it, like in the mid-2000s in San Francisco. It was just a really exciting time to be an artist and to be kind of, you know, experimenting and trying different stuff. And, you know, I was living in San Francisco. There were these events that happened all the time, like Dada Fest was run by a couple of friends of mine, where it was like 24 hours of, you know, just strange performances and people with flamethrowers and, like, you know, weird sculptures and just like the most out there weird performances that you can come up with. And so, yeah, and I organized some events back in the day that were pretty weird too. Like, you know, one time I organized an event where it was like a striptease and haircut where people would take their clothes off while also having their hair cut, which it's actually hard to find someone to cut some people's hair while they're stripping because they don't want to screw up their haircut. And like, they get very like, you know, people got surprisingly nervous about that. And just also, you know, the, I mean, the one that I did that was probably the most work and probably the ones that I'm still proudest of was I organized this ballerina pie fight where it was basically like a dozen ballerinas. And we made tutus. We made tutus and got like shoes that looked enough like ballerina shoes. And it was, you know, a dozen ballerinas and we made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pies. And, you know, I learned all about how to make a million cream pies for like a pie fight, which there's a whole art to it. And like a friend of our friend who we still hang out with all the time, we found her through friends of friends, and she had worked on some movie that Sam Raimi had done years earlier where there was a pie fight where they had to make, you know, hundreds of thousands of pies because it was like they would have so many takes and there had to be just like a million pies in every take. So she knew how to make a lot of pies in a hurry. And like, so she kind of schooled us. But yeah, and then basically it's just what it sounds like. It's two of them come out at a time and they sort of do ballet and throw pies at each other.
It sounds like so much fun. What a great way to express yourself. You seem to explore all sides of your creative being. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I mean, I try, you know, I do my best to have fun and, you know, not get bored, I guess. You know, I mean, it really varies. Like, you know, when I'm under contract to write a book, the main way I express my creative being is to work on the book so I don't blow my deadline and, you know, make everybody cry. But yeah, I enjoy, like, you know, I host this show called Writers with Drinks once a month, which I've been doing for a long time. And that is basically, you know, it's actually, there's a lot of serious stuff in Writers with Drinks. Like, I have people come and read very serious material. But as the host of the event, I try to be as silly and weird and kind of out there as possible. And just, you know, try to break up the tension, I guess, with just like these little moments of silliness in between the readings. And sometimes the readings are also super funny, but not always. And, you know, I like kind of messing with people's expectations a little bit and also just, you know, yeah, surprising people, I guess.
It sounds like it. You also have another new book that is kind of an addition to one you wrote before. You wrote 6 months, 3 days, and now you've added five others, which is a short story collection, which I found very entertaining. I like the short story format, especially when it's as well written as yours were. Would you share some of your storytelling, please? A little bit about your process, and which are your favorites of that book, or are they all favorites?
Wow. Okay, those are all amazing questions. Yeah, 6 months. So 6 months, 3 days was a story that came out in, I think 2011. Gosh, time just flies past. And so that's a story that came out in 2011, and it won a Hugo Award, which is kind of insane. And and it was, I think it was, you could buy it as a standalone ebook for like 99 cents back then. But there's never been, like, this is the first actual physical book of my short stories. And so they put together basically like six of my short stories that had appeared on their website, tor.com, and kind of just rolled them into one volume. And, you know, it was basically like, you know, I'm really like super proud of all of those stories. I think my favorite in there, I mean, I think 6 months, 3 days is the one that's sort of gotten me the most attention, and that, you know, I still like feel really proud of. Just that was the first time I've been able to write something like that. Like, it was, it felt like a little bit like leveling up when I wrote it, like just that I was able to capture that much emotion and that much relationship stuff in a story without it feeling clunky. So that's something I'm still super proud of. But probably my favorite in that book is As Good As New, which is the one about you have, you know, just, it was such a fun idea of, you know, what if it's the end of the world and pretty much everybody's dead and like one person is left alive, and you know, and then the one survivor of the apocalypse finds a genie in the bottle, because the genie in the bottle can totally survive the apocalypse. And then, you know, what do they wish for? How do they, you know, interact with, you know, the last two people on Earth or whatever? How do they interact? And that was just, it was such a fun premise. And I had a lot of fun writing it. And I felt like I was able to weave in a lot of other stuff about, you know, creativity and survival and just, I don't know, the meaning of you know, creating a world and stuff. So that was really fun. And actually about my creative process. So both of the stories I just talked about, 6 months, 3 days, and As Good As New, they both started with an idea. And that's not always where my stories start. Like, those two started with an idea. All the Birds in the Sky started with an idea. Like, what if there was a mad scientist and a witch, and how would they interact? I have other stories that have started with, there's something that in my personal life or something that I've experienced that I want to write about. How can I write about it in a way that's kind of, in, you know, that kind of turns it sideways. Sometimes there's just something that, you know, I have an image in my head, or I have a character and I want to find the story that goes with it, or a setting, or some piece of science that I'm like, oh, how does that become a story? Like, what actually happens if this, you know, if this scientific thing is real, you know, if this theory is correct, how would that play out in a story? So they come from all, like, I just try to get curious and interested in all sorts of things. And really what makes it possible to write a story is being curious about it and kind of wanting to see where it goes and wanting to understand what's at the bottom of it. So I just sort of, you know, I try to pick ideas or topics or stories or, you know, a germ of a story that actually makes me want to find out more and makes me want to kind of dig into it. And so, yeah, so in the case of those two stories, I had an idea, you know, 6 months, 3 days was, what if there are two people who could see the future, but one of them sees a future that's set in stone and the other one sees a future that can be changed. And, you know, and then the genie and the, often a lot of these stories, you'll notice one of my go-to things is to have two people and kind of play out the interaction between them, which I think is a good thing for a short story, because, you know, it's easily contained, and also just you get this interaction between these two people who go back and forth. Yeah, so I guess, you know, what, once you've got the idea, then you just have to kind of build it out and really think about, like, you know, all the contours of it and where it leads to, and try to find the emotional core of it. Like, try to find what's actually compelling about it on an emotional level, not just on a, like, oh, that's kind of neat. All right, so that's my long-winded answer.
I noticed that your characters are very dissimilar in many, many ways. And they just seem like opposites. And who's to say opposites or not? They're just so different. And if you had all these people in a room, it, you know, they're not the ones most likely to hook up, that type of a thing. Yet you are able to pull the thread of each one of them's humanity and somehow find that connection. And that to me is very special. Because a lot of times characters and stories that I read are just there. They are put in front of each other and that's it. And there's not really some minor differences. Yours are just really way, 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 way different. And it's fun. About the story about the, you know, someone who had a predetermined future and the other person who saw all the possibilities. Boy, isn't that the age-old question? is there fate? And if, you know, can you change your fate? I can't remember how many times I've had that conversation. And the way you've drawn this one out is so interesting to me. It is a way of looking at that age-old question that I had not given any thought to in the past. So congratulations on that.
Thanks. And that was actually, you know, again, it was about finding the emotional core because, you know, early drafts of that story were just sort of like, oh, it's a philosophical question, or it's like almost like a math problem, like which one of them, like one of them has to be right and one of them has to be wrong, and like which one of them is right, and like just kind of trying to follow things to their logical conclusion. But that's not a story. It's only a story if it's really about people and, you know, trying to find the human story inside that. And like, so the more I thought of it as like a relationship story, and particularly like a relationship story where both people know from the very beginning that they're going to break up and they know when they're going to break up. You know, that kind of gave me like, you know, a foothold kind of in that story.
You can almost go backwards from there, can't you, and tell the story? If that's what you know, you can go back and kind of build it backwards. I kind of like that. You deconstruct it that way. When we were talking in the green room, you mentioned that you have a couple other books that are coming out. Will you talk about those, please?
Sure, yeah. So in September, I have a novella coming out from Subterranean Press, which is kind of a reprint of something that was previously published in a few anthologies, like in a serialized form, but it's never appeared in one book before, like in altogether. And it's called Rock Manning Goes for Broke. Basically, it's about a character named Rock Manning who is really into slapstick. Like, he's this guy who grew up watching Jackie Chan and Charlie Chaplin and Harold Lloyd and, you know, all these other comedians, and is obsessed with sort of physical comedy. And he gets together with this other person, Sally, and they create these really, like, over-the-top, complicated, weird movies that they put on the internet that are just full of, like, bizarre slapstick comedy that, you know, they just kind of destroy their surroundings. And, you know, luckily for him, or maybe unluckily for him, he's growing up at a time when America is falling apart, and so there's lots of wreckage to stage interesting slapstick comedy moments in. But also, the country's kind of falling apart. There's, like, the economy has collapsed and a bunch of other stuff has happened. But also, there's, like, this fascist movement that's rising up and basically taking over the country. And it's about sort of him, this sort of slapstick comedy, you know, kind of goofy figure dealing with this incredibly intense, serious, real violence. And the kind of the line between slapstick comedy and real violence, and also, you know, whether it's possible to use comedy to make a political statement or not. And, you know, it was a thing that I had written a while ago, and something just made me feel like now would be a good time for people to have a book that deals with kind of the rise of fascism. I don't know what made me think that, but it seemed like a good time. And the other book, which comes out in January 2019, is my next novel from Tor, which I'm like ridiculously excited about. And it's called The City in the Middle of the Night. And it takes place I love that title. That's a title that I'm super happy about. That, again, I had a bunch of other less good titles before I found that title. And The City in the Middle of the Night takes place on a planet that is tidally locked, meaning that half the planet is always in permanent daylight and half the planet is always in permanent night, permanent darkness. And humans basically live in the twilight area in between those two places. And I sort of, you know, I remember thinking, oh, I could call this book Twilight, except somebody already took that title. Or, you know, maybe the Twilight Zone, because they're living in a zone of twilight. But apparently that title has been taken as well. Anyway, and so it's about this planet where we've settled, you know, 1,200 years from now. And but it's not really hospitable. It's not like a place that it's got a lot of problems, particularly the thing where we can only live in a small area of it. And the main character, Sophie, gets exiled into the night, which is basically she's been sent there to die. And so she goes into the night, and instead of dying, she makes friends with one of the creatures that lives in the night, who turn out to be much more intelligent than anybody realized. They have their own civilization and their own city in the middle of the night. That's the title of the book. And they have their own culture. And she slowly learns about them. And meanwhile, gets drawn into a lot of really messy, complicated politics among the humans that she had been exiled from, because she eventually has to go back, of course. And so it's about kind of, you know, it's about learning to communicate with a creature that lives in a completely different environment from us, like total darkness, that doesn't, you know, doesn't really use the same senses as us, and learning to just understand them. And, like, you know, it's about kind of colonizing this other planet and the kind of problems that come up when humans try to take a place that isn't really our habitat and try to take it over.
Right. But I sense the themes here in your stories, and I'm 100% behind you. Very good.
Okay, great.
I want to ask you a little bit about you. Do you like the writing process? I mean, when you sit down to write, is that fun for you?
Yeah, I mean, it really varies from day to day. I do generally enjoy the writing process. Like, I think most of the time I'm having fun, and there are days when I'm just like, oh my gosh, I got to write this scene, and this was a really fun scene to write, and oh my god, these two characters are finally talking to each other. And, like, you know, part of how I know that something's working is if I really can't wait for these two particular characters to be in the same room and have a conversation. And, like, stuff like that, it can be really fun. It's almost like, you know, when it's good, the writing process is almost like being a reader. It's like, just, you want to see what happens next. You're excited. Oh, this is
right.
Really exciting. Or this is really cool.
Right.
You know, I find that stuff really fun. The part that usually makes me want to cry is the revision process. And that's often,
sure.
I mean, you know, if you read any of my earlier drafts of anything, you'd know that, like, I usually end up with something that's, you know, I don't write a garbage first draft because I don't really believe in garbage first drafts for various reasons. But I do write a first draft that usually ends up with having a lot of problems. Depending on the process, sometimes there's stuff that doesn't connect up properly and just doesn't make sense. And some of fixing that is fun because it's like problem solving and figuring out how to make the pieces fit and figuring out, like, where I missed a step or whatever. But it gets to a part where you're just like, kind of like, shoot me now, because it's just, you're just going over the same, like, the part that was like, you went over, like, the first time you wrote it, you just went through it and you were just having fun and you were like going to the next thing, going over it like 100 times and trying to, like, fix it and just trying to make the changes, like, little changes that'll make it work. It's, you know, it goes from being like, you know, exploring brand new territory to more like homesteading or something. It, you know, you have to like plant and dig fast. Whatever those things are called, you know, big little lines in the ground or whatever. I forget what they're called now.
Sure.
But so the revision process is the worst part.
I bet it is. What is the best part of being a published author?
Oh, I mean, you know, honestly, it's just hearing from people who liked my book. I mean, you know, I there's always a part of me that's like worried that they're going to come to their senses at any moment and realize that they made a mistake. But, you know, because I've got lots of imposter syndrome like everybody else. But, you know, just having people, you know, having people say to me that they really liked my book. And, you know, I go to this karaoke club on Tuesday nights. And, you know, I go and sing, and there's a bunch of other people who go and sing, and there's like people who I don't really know them other than I run into them at the karaoke place, and they have, you know, really cool hair and they sing amazing songs and stuff. And after like months and months of just saying hi to this person in passing, they came up to me and was like, I just realized you wrote that book. You're awesome. I love that book. And I was like, wow, I've been your fan for like, you know, months of watching you sing. So that was especially meaningful. I don't know. I really like, you know, and the other thing is, in general, and this isn't really being a published author, because I think you don't have to be published for this to happen. And I think in general, like, I I don't know. I always think that people put too much emphasis on, you know, I'll be happy when this happens. I'll be happy when that happens.
Right.
And then
right.
if you keep doing that, it'll never happen. Like, you'll never
right.
be happy. Like, then by the time you get that thing, you're like, oh, well, I'll really be happy when this other thing happens.
Right.
Before,
instead of enjoying the ride, you're always waiting for the
yeah.
destination when the trip is really
right.
what
exactly.
it's all about.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess.
And back even
I
before
you.
I was a published author, you know, long before I was a published author, or when I was just kind of struggling, the part that I liked that is still kind of one of my favorite parts is just getting to be part of a community of writers, getting to be
yes.
around other people who are doing what I'm doing. And, you know, I got that from going to writing groups, going to conventions and hanging out with other aspiring writers, going to, like, you know, open mics or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have to be a published author to feel like I was part of a community. I just had to be around other writers and, you know, share our war stories
tell you,
and kind
Charles
of.
Jane, I am so on board with you on that. I am
oh, good.
The only
okay.
host in this network who is not a writer, but when I go to conferences, I feel so welcomed into the tribe. It is such a collegial group. What a great thing to do, to hang out with other writers. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So before we leave, I just want to ask you, what is something we'd be surprised to learn about you? I mean, that you really kind of a ha-ha little secret. Something good. Tell me something
Ooh.
Really funny.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Because you're so out there. You're just – everybody knows who you are in your community. You know, you've won so many awards and you do so many fun things. Is there like some little hobby or a little tick or anything like that? It kind of distinguishes you from
when I was like 12 nor like 11, I collected Smurf figurines and I drove my parents nuts, you know, wanting to go to like different places where they were giving out different Smurf figurines or where you
That's
could get
so
them.
Cute.
I was like,
oh my
for
God.
Like 3 months, I was obsessed with the Smurfs. It was super weird.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Charlie Jane Anders, I have just enjoyed talking to you so much. You're
Yay,
so
it's
intuitive.
Been so great talking to you too.
You're so intuitive, and your writing is, and I love it, and I can't wait to read your next book. Would you come back again sometime and visit me again?
Sure, I'd be happy to. That would be so much fun. I would really love that.
Congratulations on all your fabulous work and all your success, and I'll look forward to the next one, okay?
Yay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. And that's our show for
Bye.
This afternoon. Bye-bye. We have another show coming up at 7 o'clock with Mark Cameron, and then after that, CJ Box. Please join me then. In the meantime, thanks, and thank you, Mom and Dad. See you later.